right, and welcome to the continuation on a talk that was held between Thomas Sheridan, John Lash, and myself, Thomas Malone, about 2 weeks ago. The date is April the 25th, and we are going, in this talk, we are going to just continue on literally right where we left off 2 weeks ago. And it's going to be a rather timely and important discussion, so I hope everyone is holding on to their seats and has their attention completely perked up for this tonight. First, I'll just go ahead and say hello to both of you. Hello there, Thomas.
Hi, Thomas. Hi, John.
John, are you?
Yes, hello.
Great.
Yeah, I'm here.
Fantastic. So we are all set to go. So we kind of ended the last, say, 5 or 10 minutes of the last talk with John's proposal of kind of turning the tables on the predators, the so-called predators, and turning them into the prey, and taking this in the direction of sending them a message in much the same manner that they have been doing to us for these many years. So we're going to go ahead and start out right away with this monstrous topic that I'm sure has been on our three minds here for the past couple weeks, at least. So I'm just going to throw it out to both of you, and whoever wants to jump on it first, please go ahead and do so.
Well, if I might start.
Please.
It is a monstrous topic, and it should be addressed in that manner, and it's a monstrous threat that the human race is facing. Now, not all the people walking around on this planet who belong to the human species or who would, you know, claim that they belong to it have yet woken up to the reality of this threat. Some have, probably, I don't know, we can't never estimate numbers. It's probably a very small percent, and a great many of the specimens of our species are still walking around unaware of this threat. So it's a fantastic topic, I think, in a way. You know, Castaneda said, this is the topic of topics, predation.
Predation.
From a sorcerer's point of view. And what I find remarkable, as I consider myself to be in some respects the follow-up of Castaneda, in the sense that Castaneda was the warm-up act for planetary tantra, I consider it absolutely remarkable that the conversations between Don Juan and Castaneda regarding predation, and particularly regarding the flyers, which I identify as the archons of the Gnostics' teachings, it's absolutely remarkable that those arcane conversations that allegedly took place in the Sonora Desert of Mexico have now metamorphosed and mutated to the point where this is becoming a social conversation and needs to be a social conversation held openly before the entire world. Don Juan told Castaneda the question of predation is the topic of topics among sorcerers. Well, I would say to you, Thomas, in Japan, and Thomas Sheridan, who's written about psychopaths, that the behavior of psychopaths and the threat that they pose to our society is the topic of topics right now for our society. And any responsible person, I've said this before, any responsible person in society has to come to terms with this, with this phenomenon and this threat. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, this is it. This is the battle of Armageddon taking place in the domain of human consciousness. I can't think of any other subject that's more pressing in terms of the human experience today than this confrontation with the psychopath. This is it. We're really, that everything else is secondary to this, everything else is subordinate to this in terms of, you know, world, political, spiritual, social, economic, you name it. Well, we have to solve this problem now.
It is lucidly clear, isn't it? It is lucidly obvious, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
That it's become so obvious. I mean, I'm happy it's become so obvious, you know.
like all the best concepts, it's the most simplest. It's the simple concept of an evil an evil subspecies that exists among the human race, that we have to deal with them. It's quite simple.
Right.
It's as simple as that. It's very empowering in the sense that it's not limited to any one demographic or group or anything like that. So it's purely divorced from the idea that any kind of tag of bigotry and so on can be applied to it. So it's a very powerful concept that drives right to the root of the heart of the human experience and this age-old conflict between the predatory and the empathic consciousness that has existed since probably the creation of the universe. So that's where we are right now. We are truly in a time that's sensational in terms of the potential it offers anyone who's receptive to this knowledge. And this herein lies the problem. As you said yourself, members of our own species have not woken up to this yet. This is the first challenge. This is a war of attrition. The first stage will be education. Is to make as many people as possible know about what this issue is. That's happening. This is an organic process. People like yourself, myself, and many others now, through all aspects of society, are now pushing this information out there. That has begun. This is an unstoppable torrent that's actually happening at this moment. The second thing is social isolation. So that would be like finding a psychopath and either isolating them through forceful measures or through, if we have to do it, to divorce them or get them out from the rest of society. If they refuse to acquiesce to some kind of imposed Pavlovian conditioning, knowing that they can't get away with their predatory ways as easily as they once did because of the general education. And this would ultimately lead towards annihilation. Now, so you're dealing with education, isolation, and annihilation. The annihilation will be a natural aspect of the previous two, because like any subspecies mutation within a biological organic construct, it will face extinction due to being unable to replicate its numbers, both in a social and in a biological sense. So we are on the path, but what we have to have is resolve. And we have to lose our fear of this issue. This is the biggest issue that people have. It's more fear of acceptance of the psychopath and denial. To think of mythology, I think of the Bhagavad Gita and that amazing dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna, where Arjuna is filled with despondency at the concept of having to do battle because he knows that he does not want to do battle. But then Krishna confronts him and says, well, this is the only way evolution takes place, is to stand up and fight Arjuna. And this is where we are right now. And I think we shouldn't be negative about this issue. We should be very positive, because of all the things that happened in the last 40, 50 years especially, this is probably the brightest spark of all. This is the one where you can actually point to an end result and say, we have something that we can work for that's worth the cause, that will evolve the human species on this planet. And the ball is already rolling, so we're already getting there.
Well, I really agree largely with the way that you lay this out, Thomas. It's very clear, obviously, and the three terms of this picture that you draw are very clear. I'm already very close to the annihilation phase, obviously. In fact, I'm in the annihilation phase. I'd like to talk about that at some point during the course of our discussion here today. But just wanted to say that those of us who are already there, who are already facing the predator, have a fantastic opportunity to offer something to our fellow human beings. And we really offer it out of our humanity. And the way that we offer it, I think, is the way that we can offer it is staggering and shocking, in the sense of the shock of the shock goddess, Kali. Because this subject that we are talking about is really the subject of Kali, and she is really the overseer of our conversation here in a mythological sense. But what is the shock is, I would express it like this in the first person. As a human being living on the earth today, when I turn to the rest of my fellow human beings and I want to make my connection of my humanity to their humanity, well, normally we would think that I would make that connection through love, because we sort of think of love as what connects us all as human beings. And I would say, yes, there is love, but I bring you a declaration of war. I bring you a declaration of challenge to your humanity. The way that I want to meet every other human being now, the way I do meet them, is I look in their eyes and I challenge their humanity to this war. Because we are in a war. It's not a war that we chose to be in. It is a war that has evolved and probably has evolved in previous kalpas, in previous cycles. It's not the first time that we've been at this, at these battle lines, you know? But I think these battle lines are drawn today in a very special way because we have correction and Gaia Sophia and the Gaia myth and the wisdom of the Gnostics who taught so much about these predators. We have the revival of shamanism. We have the knowledge of sacred plants. And we have the dawning of this powerful indigenous magic of the human species. We have all of this now preparing us to face these predators and defeat them. So the beautiful thing now when I look at humanity is, and I say, what is the call that unites us all? Well, sure, love is a uniting force, and love will always unite us, one couple at a time, okay? But apart from that, what really unites us is the common recognition that there is a subspecies within our own kind who is murderously and massively intent upon killing all of us. And when we can, you know, some of us have already woken up to this fact. And the waking up to this fact, I love that you make this point, Thomas Sheridan. It's a very positive fact. It's not negative at all. And it, I really consider it to be the main positive truth that now leads us to claim our humanity. That's how I view
it. Yeah, I agree. The detective work has been done. So that fear of
the detective work has been done, exactly.
Yeah, it's been done.
People are catching on to it more and more, and that's great. Some people are already in the front of the class. They've caught on to your work. We know how to profile a psychopath. We know what pornology is, which is another important aspect of it. You know, that we know about fraud and deception, how the predators use all that is they perceive in some uncanny way, because they perceive what is the best in us, and then they turn around and pervert it. They rob it from us. They twist it and pervert it, and they pretend to give it back to us and to play the gods to us. And it's time for us to show them that we don't play God, but we do have God-like powers, and we're going to use them against these people.
Yes. One of the reasons you mentioned there about the Gnostic work and having looked at your own work, what you're really is happening here is you're bringing us back to the Western indigenous soul. You know what we
exactly,
should have.
Exactly, I am. I am.
You know,
yes.
And if you look at indigenous cultures, what's God help us, what ones are still left, the ones that haven't been murdered by logging companies and so on. There are no psychopaths in these communities. Zero. And the reason why there are zero psychopaths in these communities is because they kill them.
That's right.
The Inuits even have a term for a psychopath, which basically translates as he who steals our belongings and has sex with our women while we're out finding food for our children. It's like literally something like that. As soon as they recognize them, they take them on a hunting trip and they meet with an unfortunate accident. They are aware of a cleansing process that has to take place within the psychosocial and economic and cultural dynamic of their indigenous tribe in order to protect them. What's happened to us in the West since particularly Babylon and the rise of the agricultural method, the psychopaths were able to get on top of the pyramidal structure which they created and have been mercilessly, viciously, and viscerally driven in an explosive carnage of non-stop conquest and annihilation of indigenous people worldwide. And for the simple reason is they know that the indigenous people are the ones who are wise to them. Very wise to them. And that's also why they got rid of the Gnostics in the Western tradition.
That's right. It's such an important observation that if anyone wants to just take a fundamental primary course in the history of our species, there are certain blaring questions that just jump into your face. And one of these questions is, what the hell is this about that indigenous peoples all over the world have to be genocided and murdered and repressed through the centuries, you know, including the Gnostics, who were the creme de la creme of the indigenous people of Western Europe, of the Western part of the world, who had the highest refinement of that indigenous knowledge, you know? Why do these people always have to be eliminated? Because they are the greatest threat to the agenda of the perpetrators. And that is like a lesson of history that every man, woman, and child, you know, needs to know that lesson. And I agree with you that there are, I like the way you present these three stages. And while there are many people that are still catching up and still learning this, I would like to dedicate our discussion today to those people who are sort of in the head of the class, as it were, if I might use that expression, that we have done enough study, we've done enough homework to know the historical background of predation in our own species, and we've done the work, thanks to your kind of profiling, to be able to identify them in the here and now. Now, what are we going to do about them? You know? So, to go into that question, I just want to, if I may, I just want to mention something I was looking at earlier this afternoon on the internet before this talk. I was looking at a YouTube clip in which they were pointing out, the people, it was an interview, and they were pointing out, they were talking about, you know, the eugenics agenda, which I think Tom Sheridan, I like your view on this, and the other Thomas as well. Would you consider that this eugenics agenda is really a key to seeing how the psychopaths are operating globally?
Completely, absolutely, and totally. I believe that in the eugenics movement, particularly the American one in the 1920s and 30s, was to essentially look at controlled specimens who are not psychopathic and weigh them against aristocrats and various families of high standing and breeding. This is very apparent if you look at the documentation, although we're told by the American Eugenics Foundation and its ancestor, Planned Parenthood, that it was really a racial and an economic thing. It wasn't really, because if you look into it, they were interested in certain breeding programs among African Americans and Native Americans as well.
Yes,
so
they were looking for
something else in there. They were looking for something quite different. And it's just so interesting that it's been brushed onto the carpet. Oh, they were just a bunch of racists. But they weren't, because they were just as ruthlessly eugenics-minded towards the poor whites as well, and the middle-class whites, and even, you know, upper-middle-class whites. They were looking for something else. They were trying to weed out the same thing you have when you have organizations who look for what they call future leaders, the London School of Economics. What they're looking mm-hmm. for is the future psychopaths. That's exactly mm-hmm. what they're looking for. And the eugenics
right.
movement was a sort of a quasi-socialist scientific attempt to try and elevate the psychopathic gene. And we have to be honest here, to an extent they were very successful, to the top of the human, you know, gene pool. And I also believe a lot of the whole thing with the genome project is also rooted in this as well. It's, you know, we have to sit back and ask ourselves, what has become of science to the point where it ejects aborted fetuses with live rabies and then ejects that as a vaccine into a newborn baby that doesn't even have a developing immune system? There's something far more psychotic going on than just research. There is a war.
Right.
It's almost like they're trying to see the one. It's almost like they've gone from trying to weed out the psychopaths to try and creating a new generation of them. MIT recently did a survey where they discovered that if you put magnetic pulses to the limbic regions of the human brain, that they will actually be, a normal person will actually become psychopathic to an extent. Now, this is, of course, the military immediately picks up on this, but there's so much research out there that's not a, that, you see, if you look at psychopathology, all the research is to do with what makes a psychopath, how do they come about, and then you start reading the subtext below that, and what they're really saying is, how can we create more of these things?
That's exactly true. That's what's really going on. You can say that the from the what we need to understand, and I want to emphasize to people who are listening to this that the subject of psychopathy and the psychopaths in our society and predation in our own species may seem very daunting and scary to you, but the fact is that it is really simple to understand it. It is simple to understand because it is part of the formula of our animal nature and of our animal relations to each other. And we look at other animals to understand predation. We look at the other forms of predation that Gaia has provided for us. She provided those so that we could recognize predation in our own species. This is a tremendously important point about the current experiment that we're in from the viewpoint of Sophianic Gnostic science, you see. And so it is easy to understand these things. We must understand them in a ruthless and radical manner. And what we're seeing now, so I think we could say in that context, I have two things to say. First, that the eugenics program is very, very complicated. It's very vast. You find it in vaccines. You find it in the Genome Project. You find it in the pollution of the food chain. You find many aspects of it. But basically, the eugenics agenda is the way in which this tiny, tiny group of interspecies predators in the human species want to ensure the survival of their own kind. And this is an insane proposition, because they are the least able to survive on this planet. We are the ones, we, their victims, their targets, have the capacity to survive because we have in us all the intact qualities of the Anthropos, which are beauty, innocence, creativity, play, love, and empathy. And they are without empathy, and no animal without empathy can survive. So we can understand the extent of their madness, the scope of their madness and their desperation, that they have to desperately create these scientific programs in the attempt to ensure the survival of something that cannot possibly survive according to the symbiosis of nature itself.
And John, so when you're saying to ensure the survival in their minds of their type, you're not referring to a racial or, and I'm, that's what Thomas was saying as well, you're referring to them probably recognizing themselves as being abnormal subspecies.
Yeah, it's an anomaly. It's an anomaly of the notion of species. You know, they think that they are a human species that can create themselves as something more than human. And of course, this is the ultimate arrogance of the human ego. And the Gnostics warned us about us in the figure of Yaldabaoth and in the whole metaphor, if you wish to call it that, of the Archons. I mean, the Archons are not only a perfect metaphor of psychopathy, but they're a fantastic diagnostic tool for psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
So the point that I want to make, getting back to what I was just listening to before this talk, is that they were discussing in this YouTube interview a really, really important event that's happening right now, and I'd like to get both of your views on this. They pointed out that this eugenics agenda, they were tracing it back, of course, to Huxley, Galton, and all those people, and we know that a major root, there are several taproots of this psychopathic evil in our species, but we do know that one of those major taproots goes to Britain, you know, and the British element of the genocidal insanity is very strong and clear, you know, very strong and clear. And unfortunately, the British people carry that stigma. But It's only from Huxley, Galton, and those people that this eugenics program was formulated about a century ago. And what they were pointing out, which I want to share with you now in this interview, is that for a certain period of time, this eugenics self-preservation program of the psychopaths had to be carried out surreptitiously. It had to be disguised in the Fabian Society. It had to be disguised in the World Wildlife Foundation, in various ecological movements that disguise their motives. But what's happening now is they're overtly coming out more and more. They're overtly coming out. There's no more disguising. In fact, they quoted in this interview a certain British academic named John Guillebaud, G-U-I-L-L-E-B-A-U-D. And what John Guillebaud saying, you know, these academics write these position papers, and we come to recognize now that these position papers are not just innocent documents that some professor wrote. They are statements of the agenda that is to be enforced on all of us. And so he wrote this position paper saying, oh, we shouldn't talk in veiled and covert terms anymore about eugenics, and we shouldn't pretend not to tell people what we're going to do to them. We should come really out in the front and tell them what we're going to do. And what this amounts to is an open declaration of death to the human species. Now, the reason why I consider this to be so significant is, as they say in Tantra and Kala Tantra, well, two can play at that game, you know. If they're going to actually come out now, and make it, the psychopaths are going to come out and make an open declaration of death upon the whole human species in the name of population control, in the name of climate control, in the name of saving the earth, whatever. Let's make an open declaration of death on them and see how they like that. And as far as I know, I was just discussing this today here on the terrace. Somebody reminded me, because I have trouble following myself, that I seem to be, and I'm surprised, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to be the first person, as of 3 years now, who have proposed that we make this open declaration of death to them, which they are making to us.
Yes, I would agree. You are the only one that's come up and actually publicly and put your name to it, yeah.
Yeah, there has been, and there's also the idea that you hear people on YouTube comments and stuff, and it's the same thing as John is saying, but it's a beautiful logic. If Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, and Ted Turner want to wipe out X amount of the human race, begin lead by example.
Right.
Lead by example. Kill yourself, your wife, and your family.
That's right.
First. In a ritual suicide, in a symbolic ritual suicide to your God, the Darwinist climate scientific God. You see the difference. You see the thing is, John. The difference between you, someone like you, and your philosophy, and say someone like James Lovelock, is that although you both have this notion, and I do agree with it, that I'm tied up on this as well, that the Earth is a sentient being, that it's a living creature. Because you're not pathological and people like you are not pathological, you don't feel the need to sacrifice for your God. And that's exactly in terms of a mass murder ritual. And this is what's
right.
Driving Bill Gates, Lovelock, Ted Turner, Al Gore, and the rest of them. They want a symbolic blood sacrifice to their God, the Earth, which is not their God, as a matter of fact, but it's a delusional state any more than the sun was their God back in Egypt or in Babylon, Baal, or any of these other entities were their gods who they sacrificed to. But that's what we're dealing with. When we think of the aristocratic and elitist environmental movement, we're talking about a human sacrifice cult. Let's be honest, just like you said, let's cut to the chase and just talk in straightforward language. Okay, you guys believe, you, Bill Gates and all the rest of you, let's be honest now, you're a human sacrifice cult. Lead by example. There's that wonderful movie, The Wicker Man, from that was at the island of Scotland, and that
wonderful
final
movie.
Scene where Edward Woodward turns the tables on Lord Summerisle and say, if the crops fail next year, nothing less than the sacrifice of the King of Summerisle will do. And the look on Christopher Lee's face is just fantastic, because he knows he's been outwitted by the fool that he brought there for the sacrifice. And we all have to be like, we all have to be like Sergeant Howie. Okay, if that's the game you're going to play, lead by example. But it's no use saying it to them. What we have to do is say it to the rest of the humanity. We have to learn to be brave, have a bit of, you know, a bit of nerve, and start talking in clear and concise and honest language. You want debt, you want mass sacrifice, okay, lead the way, go first to the queue.
Exactly. That's one aspect of it. One thing that we can say is step up to the head of the line. If you really believe, if you have this insane twisted notion that humanity has to be ritually sacrificed to save the earth, which, by the way, I have to really add my point here, I am a, you know, I revere the divinity and the life of the earth. I revere Gaia. She is my goddess. She is my life. She does not demand that I sacrifice anything to her. So those of us who really love Gaia and who really believe, and not just believe, because animism is not a belief, you know. Animism is not the belief that all matter is alive. It is the perception of how it lives. And I have that perception of how the earth and the clouds and the sky and everything lives. And it does not require of me any sacrifice of any kind whatsoever. On the contrary, it inspires and compels me to enjoy the majesty of life to the highest degree, and to enjoy my own desires and my own sensual and incarnate beauty as an animal. That is what it calls out of me, because I am not a psychopathic, twisted person who is afraid of life. You know, they claim that ecofascism is the greatest lie on this planet. You know, they claim that they want to reduce the population of the earth to save the earth. This is the most sick and twisted viewpoint you can imagine. So now that we're at the point to recognize this, we can say, I think, Thomas, two things. We can say, okay, if that's what you really believe, you go to the head of the line and you kill yourselves. And, of course, if they balk at that point, then I'm going to come back with my second line, which is, because if you don't, I'm going to do it for you. And I'm going to tell you exactly how I'm going to do it. And this is what I think about all the time now. I think about two things, two stages. One is, just for the sake of honor, and because war should be an honorable affair, I'm at war with them. I will warn them first. Like the samurai warns by touching the hilt of his sword. That's how he warns. He touches it with the palm of his hand. He doesn't even touch it with the fingers. I will touch my sword with the palm of my hand. I will warn them that I am out to kill them. And I'm thinking a lot about how to deliver this warning. And then after that, say, do not back off. The kill is absolutely certain. The kill is coming. And how to deliver this message to them is really what concerns me in this time. And I think that I'm not the only one thinking this way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it concerns all of us who have done the homework now and who actually know what we're facing regarding globalist predation.
Okay, so we're getting right into that what we set out to tackle here.
That's
tonight,
right.
Which is conveying a message to them. And
that's right.
I'll tell you, in the last 2 weeks, what's been on my mind, just popping in my head all the time, is when they have used violence, as they've done repeatedly, to do psych ops on us.
They use violence with a psychops. They don't just kill people, and we know they kill.
Right.
I want to talk about Kennedy in that respect.
But they do
but
that
they,
with the...
Every murder they commit has a ritual psyop value to it, right?
Yes.
Right.
And they do that with a blatant violence. But I think what's been popping in my head anyway is that there are cases where violence isn't really violence because you see the T killer cells attacking an invading virus. That's not what you would call violence. That's just
not at all.
No, it's not. It's or even when a lion kills a zebra, that's not violence. So I think
right.
when things are done in the natural accord, then you can't even use that term anymore. So I think, John, what you're proposing is a natural response. So
natural,
but
yeah,
you
it's
can't
ironic.
Avoid that term either. Yeah.
Okay.
It's ironic.
Go ahead,
it's ironic that you know all these elites for their obsession with Darwinism and what they love to without as natural selection. Their whole thrust and agenda is unnatural selection. They're classic
right.
psychopaths. They preach one thing and do the other. If we were to
right.
stand up against them, we would be the ones involved in their beloved natural selection. It's just incredible. The hypocrisy
that's
is astounding.
Right.
It's such a typical psychopathic notion. They adore this idea of natural selection, and yet what are they involved in? Genomes, transhumanism, and God knows what, everything else.
Right. So what I've been thinking, I think a lot, I go back a lot to the Kennedy assassination, because it's a classical example. Of course, things have gone really bad since then. It was the moment when they really announced that they were going to take over, when the gangster mafia and the whole globalist mafia of evil announced blatantly that it was going to take over the world, and it's been proceeding quite successfully since then. And I was been thinking a lot lately, how to deliver. I'm ready to threaten them. They threaten us all the time. They threaten us all the fucking time. And now it's becoming more and more blatant. Open threats from Bill Gates reduce the world population, they're basically coming out and foaming at the mouth now and saying, we have a great agenda to murder you. So I'm here to say, well, I'm ready to tell them that I'm ready to murder them.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, how am I going to do that, So what is the way to do that, and what is the way to back up the threat? These are the two great questions that concern me in what I call the path of the Kalika warrior, For example, let's take the Kennedy thing. We all know that, you point out very well, Thomas, that was really a psyops. They not only murdered a person in public, but it was intended to deliver a message.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, it did deliver a message. I mean, it traumatized and destroyed the human psyche. I mean, it put a. I was there when it happened. I mean, it put a dent and a hole in the psyche of the American people that has never been closed. To do that. So I'm saying, I wonder if we could do that with them. I wonder if we could take a chosen or identified member of their group. For instance, the Sachs-Coburg-Gotha family, pick one specimen, take them out publicly, and send a message to them, just like they sent a message to us by the assassination of Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking about this,
mm-hmm.
about how this could be done. What's your response to that?
My response to that is that philosophically, if someone like Bill Gates talks like that, then he's got to learn how to live with the consequences of his words. So whatever revisits him, tough shit. This is the stakes he's decided to play at. So if he's rolling that
mm-hmm.
dice, he has to be prepared that he's going to crap out now and again.
Mm-hmm.
On one level, I agree. Yeah. On the second level, when I think of their brutal suppression. Like, if you look at all the uprisings in history, the only one that I could actually point to that was a genuine people's uprising was perhaps the Communards Revolution in Paris. And
mm-hmm.
that was one that was not orchestrated by Freemasons or any kind of elites or business interests. And the
mm-hmm.
suppression of that following the end of that revolution was horrific beyond words. I mean, they just killed everybody in a mass
mm-hmm.
ritual, public sacrifice. They gave everything.
Mm-hmm.
They actually paid criminals and homeless people in Paris to murder them with revolvers and with pistols and with knives in a
really?
Public spectacle. So
mm-hmm.
this is, you see, they have a capacity for revenge is what is really quite frightening. So what what we're involved in is almost like a game of chess with them. It's it's like, who's going to go with the check first, you know?
That's
now,
right.
they're constantly moving towards checkmate. They're constantly putting us in check, right? But how do we do that? So, because, you know, we're not dealing with, like you talked, John was talking there about the samurais and the warrior and all this, but they don't, they're sneaky evil bastards. They don't play by that game. You know,
that's right.
They will gladly wipe out an entire country just to make an example, or an entire religious group, like the Cathars,
right.
just to make an example to the rest of
them. We've seen them do it over and over again. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and you look at it's horrific. It's terrifying to deal with. So we'd have to do it in such a way that it would have to be on someone, one of them who was incredibly unpopular, that could never be made into a martyr, and any kind of revenge would never be, what's the word, justifiable in the eyes of,
right.
like, they killed it. You know, we lost a wonderful, you know, a wonderful human being, you know.
Right.
It would have to be
right.
something like that. I would be more in favor of something like a sabotage of, like, you know, one of their big genetic experiments or something like that first, that would cost them vast amounts of money, put back research many years, that they'd have to spend their time trying to refix that up rather than concerning themselves with revenge. An old-fashioned sort of, like, if there was ever people who were smart enough to do something like that, had the means. Like, if there was somebody right now working on the genome project and you have some piece of data in front of you, some piece of, you're like looking at some string of data or some finding that you then go home to your children and you think to yourself, Jesus Christ, what will my kids be like in 20 years' time? This kind of shit they're planning. You have a moral obligation to destroy that thing.
That's
just
right.
Just like,
that's right.
You have a moral, I would call it moral sabotage. And if we can do, it's happening in the financial markets. That is
yes,
much
it is.
Better than violence, than violence initially, because that will rattle the shit out of them, because they don't care about human life. They don't even, to a certain extent, even care about their own lives. But they are ritualistically obsessed with their agenda. If you derail their agenda, they'll be more focused on trying to repair that than going for revenge. So I think we box clever that way.
If I could jump in there a bit, I would
sure.
say though that I think the direction that John had pointed out, to my thinking is the best way to go, because lurking under their skin, just right under it, is an incredible fear of being exposed and of being attacked in this manner, because they never have been. And I think an attack on one member would do the trick. That is what would break the ranks, in a sense. They would start covering their own bases instead of working in a group mentality, which is probably a very loosely affiliated one to begin with. So, yeah, there's a question of targets. Yeah, somebody who's up there who is, no matter how you look at it, is a repulsive person that would not be supported by the general public at all, is how I would look at it.
Sure.
Well,
I think both strategies are relevant. Both strategies are relevant. I like very much Thomas's suggestion here that we attack their agenda and we attack their projects at some point, rather than attacking the individuals. But I think both are valid. I think that we're in a psychic war here. We're in a war for the survival of what is truly and truly human, what is precious and beautiful in our humanity. And it is a war. So the war is unfolding on several fronts. And as I pointed out when we began our talks on Kala Tantra, on Grok, that the first thing that we need to do is change the terms of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of their great advantages up to now, because they are so sneaky, they are so duplicitous, they are so secretive and so viciously deceptive, and they are cowards. They do not fight from a code of honor like samurai. You're absolutely right. They fight from a code of duplicity and cowardice. And so up until now, that has given them the advantage that they could dictate the terms of engagement. So we have to dictate our terms of engagement to them now.
Mm-hmm.
And we can engage them on several fronts. And I think this is a very productive way to look at it. Consider both taking out an individual target in their ranks and doing it in a way that it would have a tremendous symbolic repercussions in the collective psyche. You know, one of the things that I've contemplated about war on the interspecies predators, I made very clear in my two essays on open season on predators. There are already an enormous amount of people, human beings, who feel rage toward these predators,
mm-hmm.
but are not perhaps prepared themselves to act on it. And I'm not suggesting that you go out and take one of them out with a deer hunting rifle, although I don't preclude that option either. And I think people are going to do that, you know. But I'm saying the rage is there, the rage to want to harm these people, to want to drive them back into their hole and to want to kill them. And so if there were a public act, and I'm not saying right now how that act would be implemented, because as you know, I'm favoring a magical way to do that rather mm-hmm. than actually using a gun or a knife. But if there were to be a kill that was publicly and flagrantly demonstrated, the amount of human rage that would feed into that would be enormous. And that is what would scare them. That is what would make them realize that they are not invulnerable. Because there's one thing, you know, we need to understand our enemy. And there's one thing I find that's very important and helpful to know about them. They like to put us into cognitive dissonance. That's one of their techniques of mm-hmm. scaring us and confusing us. But they are also in a profound cognitive dissonance.
Of course.
And yeah, they are. And the essence of their cognitive dissonance, as far as I can see, is that they are afraid. They live in perpetual fear and paranoia. But at the same time, they think that nobody can get to them and that they're beyond our reach. That's their cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the niche in their minds that we direct our weapons to. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's a hubris based within the reptilian cortex of their brain that they are terrified of being found out, but live in a sort of brief spasm, that parenthesis between supreme arrogance and terror. And it's a very interesting state that they're caught in. And it's a very fragile state. It's a second on either side of that clock. And that's a tremendous advantage we have over them, in that we can derail them with our amazing dynamic creativity that all the humans have. And they don't. They're devious. They're manipulative. They're wicked and clever, but that's not the same thing as being creative and dynamic. It's a different thing altogether. And that's our one phenomenal advantage we have, is that we can knock them off that very narrow pedestal of glory, even just for a second, enough to rattle the shit out of them, to make them calm down and stop pushing their agenda so forward. I mean, I remember thinking when the swine flu vaccine thing was going on, and it was a pity you couldn't take the vaccine home with you. I often thought that if you were able to take the needle home and inject yourself, that everyone should get the needle and hold on to it, and then issue a declaration. If we see Bill Gates walking down the street, we'll inject them. You know, something like that. But we put them in a state of fear, you know, like that they see, they literally are afraid to even think about their own, that, see, it'll stop them, their own repercussions, the repercussions of their own actions is what will stop these crazy animals. You know, the fear, so that it'll make them think twice about shooting their mouths off like that. Yeah, it's absolutely true what you said. When Bill Gates stood up at the TED conference and said that, he was, you know, that's what he was literally doing, declaring war upon humanity by wiping out the Africans first. And people are aware of this. This cognitive understanding is definitely seeping into the mass consciousness. If you just look at something like Facebook, and more people are like, what the hell do you mean by that? And the more and more people, you know, are rejecting these things, rejecting ideas. So, you know, you can see the sort of inherent stupidity in someone like Bill Gates as well, that he's really not that clever to begin with. And if we can exploit those niches, and I love what you said there about a magical war, because we all know what magic really is. It's the sleight of hand, the use of language, that cunningness, that we could use our own version of that upon them by changing the terms of reference, by changing the language, and having that, and using that sleight of hand ourselves, that we don't even have to go as far as maybe, as you said, like the ultimate the ultimate methodology of dealing with them. And this is like the analogy of the chess. The analogy of the chess game comes back again. You know, we're not going to step on neither one of your black or white squares. We're going to get off the fucking chessboard and start making our own rules. And you can't play in them. And I think if we did that, boy, we would really send them a big message in terms of that the game is no longer on. The game is off, and what are you going to do about it? I've got tremendous hope that that day is approaching very, very quickly.
Well, I would say that we are in that right now. We're in that moment of our history. We're in that culminating moment of this particular kalpa, which in esoteric terms is a 26,000-year period. We're in the last 200 years, and it's like the last 11 minutes of a day, the last 10 or 11 minutes of a day. And this is really a photo finish, what's going to happen here between true humanity and these predators. And I am totally convinced that the conditions for their demise and their absolute defeat can be established right now in this window of opportunity. And in the terms that I'm using mythologically and of the Gaia navigation experiment, is this is what the Gnostics foresaw, the moment of Gaia's correction, which occurs in a three-year period between March 2011 and March 2014. So in this moment, we've set the initial conditions for a new course for humanity, and it must be absolutely and ruthlessly clear, and we must be ruthlessly honest with ourselves, that there is no future for humanity. There is no way for people to just get along and enjoy each other on this planet and coexist. We don't all have to love each other like crazy, but just to coexist with each other and to celebrate being human. There is no way it can happen unless they are eliminated. Totally eliminated. And this is the period of time, the window of opportunity to do this. And I feel that it's a magical solution, that it's a magical war, because, you see, they believe in their delusional godlike arrogance that they are waging a magical war on us. Don't we hear this so often? We hear that they're masters of the occult, that they do everything according to the Kabbalah in symbolic systems, you know. But that's all delusional magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a delusion of power that they have. This is the opportunity to show them how real magic works. And what is the best way to show a predator how real magic works? Use it on the predator. Use it against the predator. Take down the predator. The thing that they are most afraid of, they're terrified of humanity. They're terrified of life. They're of life itself. They're suffering from biophobia. There's a deep biophobia in psychopathy. I think you would agree on that.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And as you said about their magic and sorcery, it's absolutely bogus magic and sorcery. You look at any of the indigenous traditions, they don't write it down. They are oral traditions. As soon as that was written down, whatever one of their magical texts from the Lesser Key of Solomon through the OTO documents and whatever, all they have done then is nullify the power of that sorcery. And this is their stupid magic again. This is their stupid Freemasonic clumsy, you know, form of deception. It's not even it's not even worth calling it this magic compared to what the indigenous people are capable of doing, are capable of achieving.
That's right.
And it's hokey. It's Disney. It's Disney.
Yeah.
I mean, and it also creates, but it's also clever in one sense that it makes you believe that you have to join all these rites and circles and learn all these crafts and become an initiate or an adept of various rules and systems and methodologies in order to achieve this, when the average person down the street has far more magical ability within their own self that requires no framework and no doctrine than like all the collective works of the so-called great works of esoteric and mystery tradition that these psychopaths tap into. And that alone is something that terrifies them. I hope if we ever have another conversation on this again, the three of us, that we could explore this whole idea of a magical aspect to this, because I really think, John, you've tapped into something incredible there by bringing that up.
Well,
and it would be a delicious victory. You know what I mean? That would be a delicious victory, not just a good one.
Well, you know, I think we've still got a good 15 minutes or so. I think let's go ahead and let John go into that as much as he can right now, because there's no reason to wait any longer. Let's see. Just, John, take us as far as you can with your own thought processes on it, and as much as you feel is correct in timing-wise.
Sure, sure. Well, I would address that very concisely, if I may, and cogently, by putting it in the context of the Sophianic vision story. As you know, this is the guiding myth for our species, as I consider it to be, and other people are realizing the truth of that, I think, as we go along. Within the context of this story, we understand that we've been given this power of imagination, which is in excess to other animals. And what is magic, then? How can you define magic, the true magic of our species, that we could use against them, and we could use for many other wonderful things, you know, not only just to kill, but to love, to play, to create? What is the definition of that magic in Sophianic terms? Very simple. It means that we combine the power of imagination in each one of us to the imagination of the earth itself, and we ritualize that synergy. There is a synergy between the imagination of each human person, each child. Look how children play with the earth. Look at a 4-year-old child wandering in the forest, talking to the trees, talking to the sky. This magic of the children, of the anthropos, connects to the magic of the earth naturally. That's the natural synergy of magic. And what is the magic that we practice in our species is the ritualization of that to make it intentional, to make it work intentionally. So this is what I'm doing now. This is what I'm teaching. People are joining me. I'm saying we're going to combine our imaginations. We're going to focus them within the Sophianic vision story, that fantastic birthright of our species, which was preserved for us by the Gnostics, because we have to focus in a story. It cannot be random. It cannot be arbitrary. It cannot allow our imagination to become a narcissistic indulgence. You know, the real magic is in the connection with the earth. And we ritualize that by intention. So we actually do rituals of intention. And some of these rituals of intention, one in particular that I'm preparing right now, is an intention to kill a particular person. And I'm going to demonstrate this myself, how to do this. And it's a way to kill without, it has no personal onus attached to it at all. Don't know this person. It's a transpersonal action, and it is against the predators. It is a transpersonal ritual of murder against a predator. And I believe that this form of action is the way that our species can come back into responsibility for its own preservation, for its own preservation. Now, not everyone is going to be able to do this. Not everyone will want to do this. Actually, I think a lot of people are going to want to do this when they see how it's done, you know, perhaps. But the people who do this will be supported by other people who do not do this, but whose rage combines to give force to that rite. There is a very specific synergy and dynamics to this rite and to this magic. And this is a magic. You know, I hesitate. You might think that I talk very freely about magic, but I am very, very careful when I talk about magic, because I don't want to lead anyone into make-believe. So the only way that I can show anyone that this is not make-believe is to demonstrate how it actually works and to show that it is within the reach of everyone to do this, everyone who wishes to do so. And so it is natural that as we claim our magical power as a species, which is the thing that terrifies them the most, this is the thing that they're most afraid of. That's why they want to ruin our brains with chemicals and foods. That's why they want to ruin our minds with television and junk consummation of media and entertainment. Is they're so terrified that this magical power should emerge.
And that explains the mass genocides that have been perpetrated throughout history, yeah. Yeah, that's
right.
What they were trying to weed out, yeah.
That's right.
You look at the enormous logistical efforts a bankrupt Romano-Britain government put together to cross the Menai Straits and kill the last of the Druids in Anglesey, just off Wales. They spent a vast fortune at a time they didn't have it, while they were fighting wars around Britain, just to get a handful of Druids. And that shows you how terrified they are of this stuff.
That's right. And they cannot resist this, you know. They cannot resist this because it is innate to every single human being who is sane and who has not succumbed to the archonic virus, the archonic mind virus, and who has not succumbed to be in the victim-perpetrator chain of the psychopaths. Every human being has this ability. Every child has this ability. It is the insuperable power of our species, and it's time for us to demonstrate it, and to demonstrate it flagrantly and with delight and with pleasure. You know, if I kill someone with magic, that is to say, there is it's called APA, in the absence of physical agency. There is no way to prove that I could have killed that person, because I have no contact with them. I have no weapon that I used on them. All I have is the intention and the ritual. So what are they going to do? Start persecuting people for magic? Well, fuck them. They've done that before, and we survived. So if they want to persecute me for magic, they can try, you know? But
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Yeah, right? You get the point there?
I know. You look at the way they took out Kennedy. In terms of a magical ritual, and that's exactly what it was, if you were to look at it in those terms, it was almost like a trashy off-Broadway review done with a sort of B-list crowd in the most crude and unelegant manner. And this is the only sort of magic they're capable of.
That's right. That is so well said. And a crude off-Broadway,
that crude off-Broadway performance where, that's the best they can, that's the best the psychopathic mind can conjure. And that shows
you the disadvantage
they have.
And the huge difference, another huge difference between their magic and ours, is that their magic relies so much on putting the victim, the target, the prey, under a spell of fear, you know? Mm. So they can only get the prey who has already been conditioned and demoralized and driven into a state of fear and paranoia. This is what they're trying to do to all of us with their false war on terror. Why are they waging a war on terror? Because it puts the world under a spell of fear, and only when we're under that spell of fear is our natural instincts diminished enough for them to come after us. Well, the magic that I would perpetrate on them doesn't operate out of that at all. It operates out of joy and wonder. It operates out of confidence. It even operates out of love. You can say in a way that to kill them is an act of compassion.
That's very interesting. Yeah, that's a very important point. And probably the people that were involved in killing Kennedy, the number was, whether it's 20 or whatever, they were probably to a good part coerced into that, blackmailed into it, and did the act itself out of fear, at least the lower level ranks of them.
Well, it was a total conspiracy of fear. You know, the only way they can maintain these conspiracies like the 9/11 conspiracy and the Kennedy murder is by involving everyone who is accessory to it in a state of fear and keeping them in a state of fear. And the difference in the magic of the Kalika magic is it is fearless. It is absolutely without fear. Mm-hmm. And it is also completely open and transparent. Mm-hmm. It is declared what is to be done. The intention is declared. It hides nothing.
If you look at the last great act of psychopathic trash magic by the elites upon us, it's probably the weapons of mass destruction ruse to make us believe that there was actually, you know, this was just the efforts and the work they put into that. And they went to war even though no one believed it, and they're still killing British scientists to this day to cover up their tracks. That's how appallingly inefficient their all their centuries of collecting raiding everything from the Vatican archives to the what was left of the burning of the Library of Alexandria. The best they can still do is incredibly messy, and essentially constantly backfires on them. It's an endless case of damage control for them. They have to create one act of trash sorcery to compensate for the loose ends of the previous act of trash sorcery.
There you go. I love this term, trash magic, trash sorcery. I'm going to adopt that from you. I find that really brilliant. And it is so important to distinguish that the sorcery that's innate to our species, because we are a species that practices magic. We've been gifted with that, and you see it in the culture of all indigenous people. The magic to cure and the magic to kill are the same magic.
Mm-hmm.
They're just applied in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
A shaman who can cure is a shaman who can kill. And otherwise, if you cannot, you're not a true shaman. And this has been the mainstay. It has been the immunological system of every indigenous society, and it is now the immunological system of our species that allows us to overcome and defeat these perpetrators.
Absolutely. Professor Whitehead pointed that out very well in his two books on dark shamanism, that the ability to heal entails the ability to kill.
Well, it's very much to his credit, Thomas, because, you know, I've read hundreds of books on shamanism. We all have, and it's a trendy subject now, and that's a point that is most often ignored,
mm-hmm.
as you know. And we need to address the point to get back to the beginning of this conversation, because I see we're at an hour and 5 minutes here. What I share, and it's, you know, such a feeling of courage and joy to share with you the sense that facing the perpetrators is a beautiful challenge. You know, it's a beautiful challenge for our species to rise to its true stature.
Yeah, it's like in a personal relationship with a psychopath. I get up every day and I sort of thank the universe for like having me to encounter psychopaths up close and personal, because it has taken me on this magical destiny that my life is infinitely more fulfilled and interesting because of that. And if we can grasp that as an entire species, boy, we'll have some future going forward.
Mm-hmm.
This is so true. This is so beautiful to hear this. Yes, totally agree.
Now, John, I know you did mention you would like to talk about the annihilation phase, that if you had a couple words you wanted to put in on that in closing.
Well,
there.
Yeah, I'm right in the process now of bringing this into final definition. As you know, I've been looking at it closely for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And would prefer to conclude this interview with a question. Leave it with an open question, you know. First of all, I do propose that as part of our strategy against the psychopaths, that we return to them in kind, the threat. We let them know, broadcast, some of us, I broadcast it now publicly on the internet, you know. If they're going to threaten my life and the life of everybody on this planet, then I am very welcome. I'm very ready, willing, and able to threaten them. Individually or as a group.
Mm-hmm.
But the question that I want to leave you with is how to back up that threat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the question. And I would like to just leave it as an open question at this point, because we've really gone deep into the subject here this evening, this afternoon, and I'm prepared to talk about that on the next occasion. But that is what I want those of you who are listening to this to think about. If you would be willing to stand up and threaten those people, to stand up to their bullying,
mm-hmm.
and their trash magic and their ridiculous tactics of, you know, duping and deceiving people. If you would be willing to do this, then you have to consider how you're going to back up your threat.
Well, very good then. Let's leave that then as the open-ended question. And once again, when the time comes, let's go ahead and the three of us get back together and continue on from that very important question. Thomas, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, this has been a fantastic show, and I really think people will get a lot from it. I know I have. And I think we've tapped into something here that we can really take this arm in arm. And it's a dialogue. I believe that we should keep going if John is up for that.
I'm more than happy. and to do that. And the timing is excellent because in my own magical practice and my Kaliko war, I am converging very rapidly in that direction. So the timing is great. Wonderful to talk with both of you again, and we'll resume it at the right moment.
Okay, very good. I'll be back in touch with both of you in at the right time, and we'll go ahead and sign it off with that for today. And thank you very much.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, for now.